Okay, good morning, everybody. Yesterday we began the 22nd chapter in Sefer Yeshua, and we discussed Yehoshua's telling the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven and Chatzi Shevet Menashe that it's time that they settle their own portion of land. And we went through the first 9 psukim, if I'm not mistaken. And then we started a Shem Yishmol in general to understand what was going on over here in terms of the oath that the people, tribes of Reuven, Gad, and half of Menashe made with Moshe Rabbeinu. And the question was, what was the reason why Moshe did not want to give them and gift them the lands of Eivor HaYarden until after they completed and led the Jews into battle? While the Bnei Gad and Reuven insisted that he gifted to them right then and there, and that they would make good on that condition afterwards and lead the troops into battle. So the question that the Shem Yishmol asked was, well, why was Moshe so insistent on gifting it later? Was it they didn't trust them? And if they wouldn't go into battle, he would revoke the gift. That's all. And he had enough of an army of 9.5 tribes to get the gift back. So, like, aren't they good for it? That's one thing. Number two, why did the Bnei Gad and Reuven insist on adding on an additional time after the conquest to wait until after the land was distributed? How does that help anything? So now we're starting on the left column at the top from the Shem Yishmol. V'nirin, it appears, d'nei Eivor HaYarden eina kishera leveis shechina kivisifri. We're going to learn that the other side of the Jordan River, the east side of the Jordan River, is not as worthy and as holy, for example, to house the Shechina, Hashem's divine presence, as we learn in the Sifri. Ve'inena kedusha lagamri kama Eretz Yisrael. And it's not totally holy as the west bank of Eretz Yisrael is. Now, there are certain mitzvahs that apply there, many of the mitzvahs, Shemitah, etc., etc., but the ability to contain holiness, the ability for a Mishkan to be there, the ability for Beis HaMikdash to be there, it doesn't have it on the East Bank. It just doesn't have it. It doesn't have that kind of Kedusha permeating it. And we will learn in this chapter coming up where when we'll see what will happen, that the tribes tell Gad and Reuven that if you feel Im Tamei Eretz Achuz Raschem, if you feel that the land of your inheritance is Tamei, you know, then maybe don't live there. So you see, there's a reference of being called Tamei. Now, even though it says at the end of Parshas Ekev, and the Torah says, Kol Hamokom Asher Tidroch Kaf Raglechem Bo Lochem Yiyeh, wherever you step foot, the palm of your feet on the ground, that will be your land, which means to say, Ubesifri explains, the Kol Makoymes Mechutz La'aretz Sheyirshu Yisrael Yu Kedoshim Biktushas Eretz Yisrael. Sifri says that any areas outside of the promised land will have the holiness of the holiness of Eretz Yisrael if they conquer it afterwards. V'chein b'Rambam u'Ramban, and similarly the Rambam and the Ramban say b'mkomo, in its place, Shekol Makom Asher Yirtzu Lichbosh Be'eretz Shinor Be'eretz Asher V'zulasam. Any area that they want to conquer, the land of Shinar, which is Bavel, or the land of Asher, which is Assyria, and other ones like that. Yishalahem, it'll be theirs. Vamitzas kulanogavahem, and all the mitzvahs will be conducted there. Kia kol Eretz Yisrael, it's all Eretz Yisrael. So if that's the case, v'ken yishalishal lama nofel mize Eivor HaYarden. So what was the problem with Eivor HaYarden? They conquered it. Isn't that part of the promise? Third question. So this issue we dealt with way back in the beginning. Okay, Shlomi can answer like this. The problem with Eivor HaYarden was Mishum Denichbasha Koidam Eretz Yisrael. It was conquered before Eretz Yisrael was conquered. Behind the time of the Suria. That's the reason why Suria, which David HaMelech conquered, never had Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, Kibbutz Sifri, as the Sifri explains. Shomer Kodesh Baruch Hu LeDavid. David went out into Syria to conquer it. But Hashem said, you know, you can conquer it, but it's not going to have any Kedusha. Why? Because Hashem said to David, Somuch Lepaltin Shalcha Lo Kavashta. close to your palace you have not conquered. There are areas in Eretz Yisrael Gufa that were not conquered. And you're going and conquering other lands. And therefore, the rule is, and here's the important rule to know, that even though the Torah says wherever you put forth your feet will touch the ground, that land will be yours. And the Sifri says it will have the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, for mitzvahs, etc., etc. That's only after you conquered everything on the West Bank in the main part of Eretz Yisrael. If you've conquered everything in Eretz Yisrael and you need more, then that other area will have Kedusha's Eretz Yisrael. But as long as you leave parts unconquered, then what are you going outside of it for? And therefore will not have that holiness. So therefore, the fact the East Bank was conquered before Eretz Yisrael was conquered, that's why it didn't have that type of Kedusha. Oh, but wait a minute. When we come up with Lishol, you can still ask a question. Wait a minute, there is a difference between the East Bank and Syria. Why? Because, Syria, that's good. You can tell me there was a problem with Syria. It was possible to conquer the main part of Eretz Yisrael first, because they were there. Vihikdim is Syria, and he preceded Syria before conquering the rest of the land. Therefore, we could say the Syria does not have the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. Avalever Yarim at the other side of the Jordan River. They had to conquer it first. Why? What were their options? How can you conquer the West Bank if you don't get the East Bank first? How are you going to get into Eretz Yisrael? Right? Right? Sichon didn't let them go through. It wasn't like they said, okay, we just want to go through. We don't want to attack you. Just let us go through. Sichon said nothing doing. So they had to conquer the land. You know, so there's no option. Just like, you know, we say, for example, Borer. We say Borer when you separate the not part you want, the part you don't want from the part you do want, right? So you let it peel a banana? Isn't that borer? You're allowed to peel an orange? You don't want the peel. You don't want, that's mamish borer. But you're allowed to do it. Why? Because there's no other way to eat the fruit. There's no other way to eat the fruit. You can't get to the fruit until you get rid of the peel. If there be a way to eat the fruit without getting rid of the peel, then you couldn't take rid of the peel. There is no way. So the same thing, you can't get into Eretz Yisrael without conquering Eber HaYarden. So, well, why is Eber HaYarden any worse than any other country? If anything, it should be better because it had to be conquered beforehand. So that's the whole answer. V'yei Shalom, you can answer. That's the whole point. Even though the conquest had to be, it was required to conquer the East Bank before you can go into Eretz Yisrael. But who says you have to settle it? You kill the enemies. Who says you have to settle it? Who says you have to live in it? Mikol makom bechaluka o biyeshiva, but dividing it up and living in it, hoyetzarch lahamtin. Really, they should wait atchischalek viyiskasher ha'evra maravi kodem until the West Bank was divided up and made fit and worthy to live in, and only then could somebody say, "Let me have part of that land." You understand? The rule is like this. You have to settle the West Bank first. You have to settle Eretz Yisrael first. Once it's all settled and we've used it all up and we need more place, then Hashem says, by all means, go to other areas, conquer other areas, and they will become part of Eretz Yisrael. But you don't do any of that till you conquer the West Bank. Okay, what about Eber HaYarden? What about the East Bank? The East Bank, they have to conquer it before the West Bank. So Hashem says, good, I understand you have to conquer it, but who says you have to settle it first? So don't settle and wait till later. And then you could settle into it after the West Bank has been totally inhabited, and then it'll have the Kiddush. So with this, we can understand everything. Umiyata, and now next paragraph, you've been time and shalom Moshe Rabbeinu. We understand the reason of Moshe Rabbeinu, all of us shalom. Sharatza lite lemes ha'aretz. He didn't want to gift the land to them. Achiskayim atanai mikorim, until the condition was done first. First help us conquer the land, then I will gift you the land. Why? In order, Kidesh Tiskadesh Biktushas Eretz Yisrael Lagamri. So then the East Bank would have the total Kedush of Eretz Yisrael. Ma'akashatiach Aluka Vyeshiva Agar Chiluk Vyeshiva Evra Maravi. Because then, if it's not gifted now, but it's gifted after they conquer the West Bank, then they'll inhabit the East Bank afterwards, and then we'll have the Kedusha. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's whole point. But the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, they didn't concern themselves for that. They needed cities for their children and stables for their sheep. What are we going to do with our kids till then? We want to be comfortable. So Ratzulivnos Ba'od Ha'aretz Einen Olehem. They didn't want to build in a land that wouldn't be gifted to them yet. In other words, you know, you're not going to give it to us yet, so you know, we're not going to start, you know, making major investments into the land before you gift it to us. What if after 7 years you decide not to gift it to us? In other words, once we have a deed, then we're going to build. If we don't have a deed, we're not building. All right? So that's why they insisted on Moshe gifting it to them. Nope. Moshe Rabbeinu Shalom, Kedei Shal Ikonis B'machlekes, he saw it wasn't so easy to deal with over here. He didn't want to get involved in an argument. He felt compelled to agree to their request. He felt compelled to, okay, listen, you insist on getting it first? He saw that the environment wasn't one to fight with them. So he agreed with them. Okay, so now we have to explain one last thing then. So I'll give it to you. You realize though, it's not going to have that same kind of Kedusha. So okay, that's fine. But they figured they could compensate for it. Why? In the last paragraph. This explains the benefit of why they felt they didn't want to go back to their places ad achar achiluk, until the land was divided. Why? They want to wait extra. Why? Kedei letakem b'tzad ma, in order to repair at least somewhat, shiti yeshivas evra maravi makorim, to show that the inhabitation of the West Bank is happening first. Even though the division was earlier on the East Bank, but at least in terms of settlement, the West Bank would be settled first. To the degree that they could fix things up, they could fix things up. So he's saying like this, that Moshe Rabbeinu says, why don't you guys wait and I'll gift it to you later. And if I give it to you later, after the land is conquered on the West Bank, they don't have all the Kedusha Eretz Yisrael. And they say, no, we don't want to start building and investing in all this unless we know for sure it's our land. So Moshe says, okay, I'm not going to fight with you. Okay, I'll gift it to you now. But they understood that the fact it was gifted right away could limit the Kedusha to the East Bank. So they compensated for that by saying what? That once the land is conquered, we'll wait an additional 7 years till you inhabit the land. So now that you're inhabiting it, the land, so we're doing more than what you had asked, Moshe. If we wait till we have a land, it will, you know, kind of show that we're not really inhabiting our land yet, and that should help to bring the Kedusha somewhat more to Chutz La'aretz, to the East Bank in that way. And perhaps it did help that at least that mitzvahs were the mitzvahs Ha'aretz were done there. And that's how we got to that kind of compromised status. So Syria, for example, that was conquered before land was conquered on the West Bank, has no Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, even though David conquered it, for nothing. Not even for Trumas of Meisters, a Chala, any mitzvahs at all. It has a total status of Chutz La'aretz, even though we conquered it. Avra Yard and the East Bank, insofar that they insist on getting it gifted right away, it couldn't have the total Kedusha. But insofar that they waited the extra 7 years, it at least had a semi-state of Kedusha, where at least the mitzvahs of the land would apply to the East Bank as well. But to have a Beis HaMikdash there and to have Shechina there, that could never be. So that is a very nice logical explanation. Otherwise, it's very hard to understand, you know, why they waited the extra 7 years. Doesn't make any sense, by the way, the extra 7 years. So they felt it would add to a certain degree of Kedusha to the land that it did not have. Okay, so that's that one piece. Next, let's take a look in the booklet on the Parshos B'Sifrei Nevi'im, that there should be some extra copies over there. And let's take a little bit of a look and see some very beautiful midos over here, which is only going to set up and highlight even more so the phenomenal question that is going to be asked in this chapter, which we'll probably get to tomorrow. But there's like some incredible questions of what's going on in this story. It's one of the most enigmatic stories in the book. And it just shows you, so we're going to learn now, it's going to highlight it. Okay, so as we said, around the last, this is the last section of the Sefer Yeshua, the last three prakim, is a description of Yeshua as his the end of his leadership. And we need not start on the first page, there's a lot of detail over here. But basically, Yeshua said, you were very loyal troops, you listened to everything we said. We couldn't even start on the second page. And we understand why Yeshua was warning them excessively, because they're saying, listen, the gift of Eretz Yisrael, you know, is on condition that you receive the mitzvahs and you do the mitzvahs. And look at, if you just look at Kuf Tzadi Beis, right in the middle, before the next section of Kavod HaRav, that little last paragraph that starts with the word De'u, he emphasizes what Moshe was saying. He says, De'u, you should know, Matnas Eretz Yisrael v'Yeshuva, the gift of Eretz Yisrael and living in it. Musnim Tnai, there's a big condition for it. Bal Yavor be'Kabolas Ol Machlus Shemayim ve'Kabolas Ol Mitzvah v'Shleimus. You can't transgress and throw off the yoke of heaven and the yoke of doing mitzvahs in its entirety. That's critical. Gam kasher atem misrachim mata, even though you are distancing yourself now, mitachas yodo hamechuvenes shel amanig, even though you are distancing yourself from the hand that is directly focused on the land, right? And you're distancing yourself from hamelech, from the king, vanovi and the novi. Vegam biyosem rechokim mishkan Hashem asher v'shilo, and even though you're very distant from the mishkan and Shiloh and the holiness, etc., etc. So don't think, you know, the fact that you're far away means you don't have to keep your religion as much as you should. Because there still is, this is the gift of Eretz Yisrael. To the degree that you did wait these 7 years, there is a certain holy land status to it. It doesn't have the Shekhinah holiness, which is semi-holy state. There's different levels of Kedusha in the world. So right after the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael comes the Kedusha on the East Bank. So there is a great degree of Kedusha anyway. The land is a different land than other lands, and the land will respond in positive or negative ways. That's one element of Kedusha. Although the Shekhinah won't be there. But to deserve and to even live on the East Bank, you have to live a very high standard of life in terms of religiosity. So that's why he closes off with that strong warning for them as well. That they have to realize that no matter, even if you're not in direct sight, you still have to be very, very careful in terms of your Jewish observance. Now, the next section is really a very beautiful piece over here. So it says that Yeshua, if you recall, Yeshua gave the tribes a bracha. And in Pasuk Vav, it seems to indicate clearly that he blessed them, he sent them, and they went to their tents. Clearly. Then we get this interlude of Chatzi Shevet Menashe, and then we have another bracha in Pasuk Ches. So let's read inside now under the topic Kavod HaRav veKavod HaTalmud, the honor for the Rav and the honor for the Talmud. Ma bracha berachem Yeshua b'shalchosam? What bracha did Yeshua give them when they left? So lechura ksuva bracha b'pasuk shlachav. It would appear Pasuk Vav says he gave them a bracha. Doesn't say what the bracha is. Would appear that the bracha is that which is found in Pasuk Ches, where he says, "Vayomer lehem limer." He says to them, "Binuchasim rabim shuv elo lehem." Go back to your tents with great wealth. Ubimikne rav maod and a lot of cattle. Bekesa bezov binuchasim bebarzel. Ubishleimus harbim maod, gold and silver and iron and copper and all complete lots. Chalkus shol aveichem imachechem. Divide up the spoils with your brothers. That seems to be, I'm sorry, Ubislamos. Is that a printing error? No, it's my reading error. Ubislamos. Garments. I'm sorry. With a lot of garments, etc., etc. And you divide it up, and that seems to be a wonderful blessing. So the explanation is, Atem nilchamtem yachidim sharashvatim. You fought together with other tribes. Uchei magia lachem chelek shav v'shol. You deserve an equal portion in the loot. And this loot should be divided even with your brothers who are watching the possessions that you had when you went to battle. In other words, whenever you go to war, not every able-bodied man goes to war. you do leave people behind to, you know, run the supply lines. You leave people behind to watch the women and children, right? You couldn't, you know, can you imagine if they sent every troop into battle? Well, where are the wives? Where are the wives and kids the whole time during these 14 years? They were in Gilgal. Right? It's like, you know, Lahavda, like Gaza City, you know, like it's where you're going, but you don't have a place yet. You know what I mean? Like it displaced people. Right? So like you figure there's 600,000 soldiers, but about 2 million wives and kids. So what's going on there? So they're in Gilgal. You know, they're just living in tents and, you know, making do till, for 14 years. Now, you're going to send all the soldiers out into battle? Then what happens, you know, wouldn't it be clever for one of the candidate nations to say, listen, the women and kids are exposed, let's just wipe them out. Right? So obviously they had to leave soldiers behind, right? So now, not everybody goes and fights. You have to leave people behind to protect what you have. Certainly on the East Bank as well, even more so, that they're very far away from the Jewish people, they'd have to leave certain troops over there to watch the women and kids. I mean, you got certain fighters that are stronger and others that are not as strong. And obviously the type of courage and strength you need to conquer is different than you do just to maintain and hold on to what you have. So he said you have to divide up also with your brothers who did not go into battle. That stayed with the families on the other side of the Jordan River. We find that Avraham Avinu, when he divided up the loot, he divided up amongst those who stayed behind to watch his family. Moshe Rabbeinu did this idea. Melech also does this. So you see this is, and this was like a chiddush. It's like a chiddush halacha. It's an insight in the halacha of dividing up the spoils of war that you share with those who don't go to battle either. You might think they shouldn't get. We say, no, you get. So that's what he was telling them. However, that seems to be the blessing. In other words, you're entitled to the loot. Have some loot. Like everybody else, you should get, you know, whatever your percentage is, a quarter of all the loot, you get that and divide up with your brothers. Fine. The problem is, Avlonovi hichnis bein vayivorchem, but he slips in pasuk vav, which is he blessed them, lebein tochan abracha, between the content of the bracha, which is in pasuk ches. In other words, if you took out pasuk zayin, everything would be really nice. Pasuk Vav says, Yeshua blessed them and sent them away. And Pasuk Ches, and he said to them the following. Okay, that would be the blessing. That would seem to make a lot of sense. Problem is, he slipped in Pasuk Zayin in between. Which says, Ulechat, next page, Ulechat Zishem of Menashe, Nasan Moshe Baboshan, and to half the tribe of Menashe, Moshe gave them land in Boshan, which was the northern part of the East Bank. And Yeshua gave the other half, Imachayim with their brothers, maybe Yarniyam on the West Bank. And also, when Yeshua sent them to their tents, he blessed them. So, what's that doing? What's that whole puzzle doing? So, we discussed it yesterday. Let's just review and see some other ideas. Chelko Harish Shal Pasuk, the first half of the Pasuk that describes the division of Menashe, Bala Namek, that comes to give an explanation. That explains why half of Menashe's tribe left with Reuven and God and separated from Yeshua. Right? That was the whole idea when Yeshua called out to Reuven, God, and half of Menashe in Pasuk Aleph. That's who he's dealing with. Pasuk Zayin explains why there's only half of Menashe. And we already said some unfortunately don't like that because we already know why it was split up. Because Moshe gave them half and Yeshua gave them half. Right? Even though there's those on the West Bank, but there's a division. Okay, you could, okay, even if you say that. What does the second half of the pasuk mean? The words, Vigam kisholchem Yeshua lehem, and also that Yeshua sent them to their tents and blessed them. So what is that trying to say? I mean, in pasuk vav, he was talking to the 2.5 tribes. He's been talking to 2.5 tribes for the first 6 psukim. Okay, you got that? He calls the 2.5 tribes. He's speaking to the 2.5 tribes. He tells them they were good, and they should go back now, and be careful of the mitzvahs, and then it says, and he blessed them, and he sent them. Seems he's talking to all 2.5 tribes. So what's the end of Pasuk Zion saying? And also, you know, why interjecting Menashe? Okay, we'll say, because he's explaining why that's half of the tribe of Menashe. Okay, it's difficult. But what's this now? Vegam kishilchem Yeshua levechem, and also he sends them to their tents and he blesses them. I mean, he did already. That's what he's going to ask now. Avomai kavonas asev shal pasuk. What does the second half of the pasuk mean? Did he send them and bless them with a unique bracha? For he called divrei prayer to nemer gam lachatzin. In other words, was this only to the second half of Menashe? Is this idea of pasuk ches or this vayivorchem gam kisholchem vayivorchem? This is a unique bracha for half of Menashe now. He already blessed all two and a half. Now we single out Menashe. Now we say this, that there's another blessing going on. So they're getting a special blessing. The whole words of farewell were to the half of Shev Menashe too. What does this pasuk have to do with anything between these two pasukim that are dealing with bracha? Just get rid of pasuk Zion. Everything's fine. If there was no pasuk Zion, the pasukim read beautifully. In Pasuk Vav, he gave him a blessing, and Pasuk Ches, that's the blessing. Now he mixes in, explains, half of Menashe is here, half of Menashe is there. And also, Yeshua sent them to their tents and blessed them. Like, what's going on? So, Rashi, Mechalik, as Bracha, Birchas HaPreda. So Rashi, Taka learns that way. He separates the blessings of farewell. Mean to say, Kodem Nifra Yeshua Mishifta Reuven V'God. First, Yeshua takes the leave of Reuven and God. But Navi ain't a muscle on Sochan Abracha, and Navi doesn't really tell us what the Bracha is. According to Rashi, Pasuk Vav, Yeshua blesses them, is referring to two of the tribes. Then he turns to half of Menashe and gives him a different Bracha. And that's the specific Bracha that's written in Pasuk Ches. When he says, Va'achechem, Shatem Yechalka Shashol, and the Achechem part also throws in Reuven and God. Right? So, you know, it's a little bit tricky to learn it that way. Divide also with your brothers. But it's mainly a blessing for half of Menashe. Ulam Rashi in a masmer do a chilik Yeshua bein nochli evaryer. Rashi doesn't explain why he separates them, you know, between those who are on the other side of the Jordan River. Why Rashi's saying yes, pasuk ches is the special bracha for half of Menashe, but why? Bnei bo chazal. So the rabbi, the Talmud does, the rabbis of the Gemara, the Medrash gives us an explanation. Bnei bo chazal. Our rabbis look at all the difficulties in the text of our holy writings. They give us a key to explain the whole Indian. And this is a very beautiful thing. Rabbi Yisrael, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yudin Giuri, these three rabbis, they went to learn in the yeshiva and hear a shir from Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Then they were there. They were by Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Now, they had probably come from out of town. And now it's time to leave. V'not la'men rishus, and they went and asked permission to take leave from them, to go back to their homes. They went, they had their prayer, and they said, okay, Rebbe, we're going back, we're leaving, just want you to know, good, and it says goodbye. But it turned out, v'imtinu sham od yom achad, they were delayed in that city before they actually left another day. So they said, shichamonu litul m'men rishus pam shenis, we got to ask permission again to leave. We've got to say goodbye again. So one of them extrapolated a pasuk and says, how do we know we're supposed to do this? We said goodbye on Monday. We didn't leave. It's already Tuesday. So we got to go back to the Rebbe again and say goodbye. So it says, Kfar Kosev, it says in the Torah, Vayivorachim Yeshua, Vayishalchim, Vayochol Achrei, Loleim. It says in Pasuk Vav, Yeshua blessed them, sent them away, and they went home. What does the Torah mean? What does the Navi mean to say when in the next pasuk when it says v'gam ki shochem yishu aleihem, and also when Yeshua sent them to their tents, v'yivorchem, bless them. He already blessed them, and he's not going to answer that it's a unique blessing for half of Menashe. So he says el v'shosho yisol mekavshim v'chalkin zaris. But at the time the Jews were conquering, dividing the land, ha yeshev Reuven v'God imayim. Reuven and God were with them. They were with them for the whole 14 years. Finally, not Yeshua, they finally got permission from Yeshua to go back to their tents. But Vishal, Sham, Od Yom Acharim, they said a few days. Yeshua told them, called them and says, guys, it's time for you to leave. You know what? I guess they couldn't leave on a dime. Probably took a couple of days to get their stuff in order before they could actually leave. So they delayed a couple of days. So they went and asked permission again to leave. Therefore it says, and also when he sent them a second time. It's a second sending. And Amar Rav Yudin, Rav Yudin adds one more interesting point. Shevet Reuven v'Gad b'nei Famalia shel Yeshua. Reuven and Gad, they were the legion of Yeshua. They were his honor guard. Uliyom v'liva osam adayardim. And they escorted him until the Jordan River. In other words, what happened was, it seemed that when Yeshua told them to leave, you know, he did the halach of Levoya. He escorted them. Yeshua escorted the two troops all the way to the Jordan River. He says, I gotta go, you know, I'm gonna do the mitzvah of accompanying you. So he accompanies them all the way to the Jordan River. But now they're gonna leave and cross the Jordan River. Yeshua's gonna have to go back alone. V'kivin shirosh nismat v'famal shelo. But when they left, they saw that his honor guard was totally depleted. Like they were practically the entire honor guard. So what's gonna come back? Yeshua's gonna now go back to Ephraim by himself or with a very, very small group of people. So Chazu Livo Sad Beso. So what did they do? They went and accompanied him back to his house. And then when he saw that, he said, okay, I gotta have to accompany you back. Right? But, you know, in other words, you know, don't you have that sometimes? You know, somebody, you have a guest at home, and you say, you know, I'll walk you. I'll walk you home, right? You start walking him, you go all the way home, the guy says, you know, I feel bad. Now you're walking home alone, so I'm going to walk you back. And but what do you see? They showed tremendous kavod for Yeshua. We don't realize the kavod that God and Reuven showed. They did everything they could to show that they were mamish, the most loyal people. It means wherever he went for the 14 years, like they were his legion. So now what do we see from all this? Chazal hevinu eifo mitoch ha-psukim. The rabbis understand from these verses, Yeshua shilchem ubarchem lekulam. Yeshua blessed them all the first time. Shifte Reuven, God, Chatzim Menashe, Pamayim. He gave them two blessings. Both of them, two blessings. But they are Rishon, according to the first opinion, Notlu Pamayim, so the first rabbi. In other words, there's two rabbis in this Gemara over here. Right? One rabbi says that twice they asked permission. After they left the first time, they waited a few more days. In honor of the Rav, told me, you have to ask Rishus a second time. And guess what? It came plus the Ramah. That's the Ramah's halacha in the Hilchos Kibud Rav. There's a section in the Shulchan Aruch in Yeridea that tells the halacha how to give kavod to your rabbi. And it says like this, Hanifta Merabba, if you take your leave from your Rebbe, Vinadal men Rishus, so you got permission to leave. Vilunbin, you slept overnight and stayed longer. Tzarech lachsev little men Rishus, you gotta say goodbye again. Give permission again. That's common courtesy. We're very far away from that courtesy. But that's what it is. So they gave him courtesy. They showed him covet. They waited and said goodbye a second time. Uludata shel Reb Yudin. According to Reb Yudin, the second rabbi, no. Lo natal men Rishus pamayim. They didn't ask twice because he holds they left right away. It's not because they didn't stay longer. The opposite. Yeshua who shaliva osam. It's Yeshua who escorted them, because the word shiluach, when you send somebody, can also mean escorting. And he escorted them out of Yardim Bapar Rishon for the first time. And then the shvatim went back for his honor and accompanied him back. Because his honor guard was depleted, because they were the entire honor guard. It's not fitting that the Rebbe should go back with a very small honor guard. When they came back to Shiloh, they asked permission again for Chazalim, and then they went back, and then he blessed them. Either way, you see, especially according to the second way, but either way, you show they gave kavod to the Rav. Even according to the first opinion, that they asked the second time permission to leave, or that they escorted the Rebbe back all the way. But either way, they showed a lot of kavod to him. Now the psukim make a lot more sense. Even though it says in Pasuk Vav, he sent them away, and they went to their tents. Right? And the truth is, Hem Kfar Holchu Bekivun Lo'aleihem, it says he sent them to their tents. And they were about to go to their tents, right? They were going to the direction of the tents. So if that's the case, Lama Nemar Shuv, why do we have that whole next Pasuk? Right? Why does it say in Pasuk Tes, which we haven't learned yet? Oh, we did learn. Did we learn it yet? Yeah. Pasuk Tes then says, they returned and went, all 2.5 tribes from the Jewish people, from Shiloh and Eretz Canaan, to go to Gilad. What's that all about? They already went in Pasuk Vav. My Kavan is Kevah Pasuk. Why is the Pasuk repeating itself? Pasuk Vav says they went. Pasuk Tes is repeating. Answer is, Elohim Holchu Bemes Pamayim. The truth is they went twice. Bapam Arishon Kibit Arav is Talmidov, Vayishalchim. The first time, they honored the Rav, Kibit Arav is something, the Rav honored them and sent them. Who Leva Osam, and he accompanied them, according to the second rabbi. That's Pasuk Vav. He took them all the way. But the second time, they went by themselves. Why? After getting back to Shul because of cover the Rav. Oh, so that's very nice. So you see how much in cover the Rav and cover the Talmud that was involved over here. And that's talking why they got an extra bracha. Because it seems that bracha of Pasuk Ches, that is the bracha he gave them either the second time they asked to leave, or after they escorted him back, he gave him another bracha. So you see that whatever, when they left the first time, he had not given them such an amazing bracha. Only the second time that he gave them such an amazing bracha. Okay, we could speculate on why that's so. And indeed, you know, the Mefarshim talk about, like, why do you have to go back and ask your Rebbe for a second time? Right? And the whole idea is, why do you have to go a second time? So, you know, we have to look further into the Mefarshim, but one over here says that when a person leaves his Rebbe, it could be that, you know, sometimes the Rebbe may have not remembered to say everything he wanted to say to the student. A lot of times maybe he's busy, he's got a lot of things on his mind, and sometimes when the student leaves, you know, maybe you have more time to think of the student a little bit more, and maybe you forgot to say everything you want to say. So if he hasn't yet gone to where he plans on going, it's worth to get it to add on to the bracha. In other words, you go to your Rebbe, you say, I'm leaving. Okay, kind of catch the Rebbe off guard a little bit. Oh, he gives you a bracha, and then you leave, and then the Rebbe's like thinking about you, because now you're saying you're leaving, so he thinks about you, and he thinks, you know, maybe I should give him a little more of a bracha. It was kind of on the spot, and this and that. So guess what? He comes and says, oh, Rebbe, I didn't leave after all. Oh, okay, and I was thinking about you. So here, let me give you more of a bracha. In other words, that is covered a Rav, because the Rav's whole goal is to enrich the students. The Rav's covet is as good as what the students are going to be, right? And it comes out, the Medrash says that the second bracha Yeshua gave was much bigger than the first bracha. Right? Especially the way we explained, divide up the spoils with your brothers. And he explains to divide up with your brothers that are out, that didn't go out to war. And that was a big chiddush to say, you're going to get all these things. It's the whole ruling that he gave them. So it comes out that this covered for the Rav will enhance your status and make you more worthy to get better brachas. In other words, you know, the question really is, so why did Yeshua not give him such a good bracha the first time? The answer is, you know what? When you see more good things in a student, it brings out more awareness of how good they are, and they deserve more of a bracha. I mean, the whole idea of a bracha is dependent on how deserving you are. How deserving you are. And of course, they were with him the whole time, and he gave him a bracha, whatever the bracha was. But the fact that they really showed incredible covet and they went the extra mile, especially when like the second shot, that they escorted him all the way back, so that he began to see things in them that he may never have seen before. He saw higher levels of how special that they were. So he says, you know what? Now that I see Taka, your mom is so good, so I'm going to give you an extra bracha. And they got that extra bracha from him. What do you see? Would you say that there's any doubt as to the tzidkus of these tribes? Is any doubt to the righteousness of these tribes? I mean, you figure, man, they can get their land now. Okay, Rabbi, we're gone. We're gone. You know, when it came to the end of the Zman in the yeshiva, you know, especially like this kind, you had a winter Zman, and with an Ibrahur, with an extra month, and your mom was in yeshiva for 6 months. You know, when it's time to go, guys are gone, man, you know. You're in a rush, you miss your family, you want to go back. Right? Can you imagine the guy says, okay, Rebbe, you know, I'm going to wait to say goodbye to you a second time. Or even if the Rebbe escorts you. And then they escort him back. I mean, come on, their wives and children are waiting. So, you know, Yeshua, you know, could have always maybe doubted some of their sincerity, you know. Really, you know, you really want to have a lot of land and this and that, and you're just doing this so you can get what you want. But, you know, there's no reason why they had to go back and escort Yeshua all the way back. There's mamish no reason why he had to do that. So they mamish went out of their way, and a lot of, you know, when you don't need to do something that kind of reveals retroactively what you've been doing all along is like, when you're doing something and you know that's a condition of an agreement, okay, so at least you're an honest guy. You're doing what you have to do. And they waited till Yeshua said it was time to leave. But now it's time to leave. You know, out we go, man. Goodbye. Just like, you know, the opposite. Remember we learned when Hashem told Moshe to tell the Jews after a year at Har Sinai, time to leave. Right? So it's time to leave. And they go. And the Gemara is critical of them. They said, well, they're like children running away from school. Chas Hashem is going to give me some more mitzvahs. Right? What do you mean? Hashem told them to go. They went. Yeah, but you know, you were there for a year at Har Sinai. You just run like that? So the same thing, you know, they made a deal. Okay, they were there for 7 years. They promised another 7 years. Okay, but you know what? Because they had to. If you have to, you have to, you know. But now he says, okay, you can leave. Okay, so now they have to. So why aren't they running? Because the truth of the matter is, they felt a very strong connection to the people on the West Bank. They felt a very strong connection, Yeshua. They developed a good relationship. They said, you know, yeah, we could leave, but you know, we'll even more than what we said we're going to do. And to walk them back, I'm sure delayed their trip a few days. And when you miss your family, every day counts. So Yeshua saw, like, really how special that they were. You know, then he says, you know, you even deserve a better bracha. You really care about everybody. So, you know, don't forget to divide the spoils and this and that. And he gave them bracha for their wealth, etc., etc. So this really magnifies their greatness, which will only heighten the question and the strange activity that they're going to do tomorrow. And the suspicions that are casted upon them. And Mr. Shem, stay tuned. Don't miss tomorrow's exciting class.